So we're going to call the August 30th, 2022 Morrill County Planning Commission meeting to order. And the first item on the agenda is the roll call.
Commissioner Mary Killian.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on.
Where?
Commissioner Rod Taylor.
Here.
So he sent some.
He sent some.
Commissioner Wayne Seitz.
Here.
Commissioner Brian Thompson.
Here.
Commissioner Carl Smith.
Here.
Commissioner Stanley Anderson.
Here. Aye.
Commissioner Stacy Ekstrom.
Here.
Vice Chair Greg Sweek.
Here.
Chair Jeff Winholz.
Here.
You have a quorum.
She said she'd be here.
Right? Yeah.
Through Zoom.
Next on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Samson might be there. Right?
That's Rock.
It's Rock. That's Rock. Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Next on the agenda is the minutes from the July 26, 2022 Planning Commission meeting. Anybody have any corrections or any motion in regards to the minutes?
I would move approval of the July 26th minutes.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Greg, seconded by Stacy, to approve the July 26th, 2022 Morrill County Planning Commission meeting minutes. As they stand, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair Winholz, Commissioner Killian is on.
So the minutes are approved, and for the record, we'll have the record show that Mary Killian has joined the meeting. So now I will read the opening statement for the August 30th, 2022 Morrill County Planning Commission meeting. Good evening. My name is Jeff Winholz, Chair of the Morrill County Planning Commission. I will be presiding over the first action item. Vice Chair Sweek will preside over the second and third action items. Persons who wish to provide testimony may do so orally or in writing. Testimony and evidence must be directed toward the criteria described in the staff report and findings or land use regulation believed applicable. Failure to reason issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the decision maker and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes an appeal to the Board of Commissioners on that issue. Please speak only when identified by the chair. Please begin your testimony by giving your name and your address. If you have exhibits for consideration, please provide a copy to planning staff. For persons participating via Zoom, please raise your hand or place a note in the chat so we know you would like to speak. If you'd like to request the commission to hold open the record or continue the hearing, you must make that request before the public portion of the hearing is closed. If the commission holds open the record, you may submit additional written testimony. The county is required by state law to make a final decision on quasi-judicial decisions, including all appeals, within 150 days, unless an applicant waives that right. This concludes the introduction. I'll begin with the first item on tonight's agenda, and that is Condition Use Permit CUPN 356-22. Vance Dairy Construction is the applicant. Three Mile Canyon Farms is the owner. Applicable criteria include MSZO Article 3, Section 3.010, Sub 14, and Article 6, Sections 6.020 through 6040, and 6.050, Sub 1. So we'll start with the hearing. And I think that's Stephanie.
Yes, thank you. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up a screen share of the vicinity map. And I just want to make sure that everybody can see it first. Are we good?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so conditional use permit request CUPN 356-22 is a request to approve a temporary concrete batch facility to produce ready mix concrete. The applicant's Vance Dairy and the property owner's Three Mile Canyon Farms. The project location is approximately 10 miles southwest of Boardman on Syntag Road, and it is wholly within the Three Mile Canyon Farms boundary. The property is zoned exclusive farm use And this request specifically is for our portable concrete batch plant that would be used for dairy construction and modifications over the next several years. This use is used in conjunction with farming and dairy operations and meets all the criteria that you've seen in the findings. It would pose no adverse impacts to farm practices or surrounding farms, and it would not increase farming the cost of farming practices. It is listed as a condition of approval that the applicant contact the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and obtain all necessary permits from them. And as I understand it, they've already been working with DEQ on this. They basically wanted to start yesterday, so I think that they've got that going already. It is also listed as a condition of approval that the applicant coordinate with the Morrow County Weed Supervisor to control any noxious weeds as necessary. So they've reached out, and I believe they've at least attempted contact with Dave Pranger, and they'll be coordinating with him. The only other conditions that have been placed is complying with any requirements of the Morrow County Public Works Department regarding access to the site. This is on Syntyche Road, and it is down pretty much in the middle of the farm. You can kind of see it if you look at the vicinity map that's shown there, right where tax lot 110 and 100 meet along that red line. If you look right in the middle, you can see the corrals down there, and it is just to the east of that. So it is kind of in the middle. I hadn't heard from Morrow County Public Works at this time whether or not they'll require any access permits. So that's why it's been recommended that they comply with any of those requirements. There are no temporary signs or lighting that has been applied for with this, but should they need any, they would need to comply with the Morrow County Zoning Ordinance regarding those, and comply with the Morrow County Solid Waste Ordinance. I attached with the findings the vicinity map and a copy of the application and the narrative that they provided with it that lined out their proposed conditional use. So if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. That would conclude my staff report.
Any questions from any of the commissioners for staff before we open up for the public testimony? So nothing here, and I don't see anybody on Zoom, so we'll open it up for a public testimony, and we'll start with anybody that's in favor of the application.
Stephanie, the applicant stopped by this afternoon. Were they gonna come?
He wasn't going to be able to make the trip down. He mentioned that he might join via Zoom, but he didn't know because he'd be on the road, so I don't see him on.
So seeing nobody that wants to testify in favor, anybody that wants to testify in opposition to this application? Seeing or hearing none, we move on to the next category. Anybody that's neutral, anything at all to say about this application? Seeing none, we will close the public testimony portion and the commission will make a decision.
Could folks on Zoom hear that?
Oh, sorry.
I can't see any
you
faces.
Seconded?
So.
I seconded, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's been moved by Stacy and seconded by Greg to approve application CUPN 356-22. Any discussion? Hearing none, would you do a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Killian, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Taylor, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Seitz, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Smith, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Ekstrom, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sweek, how do you vote?
Yes.
And Chair Windhouse, how do you vote?
Normally I won't vote unless there's a tie.
Okay.
Just my rule.
Okay.
So application is approved. And we'll move on to the next item, and I will be stepping down from that item, and Greg Sweek, Vice Chair, will take over.
Okay. Okay, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. My name is Greg Sweek. I'm the Vice Chair of the Planning Commission. This next agenda item will be a combined hearing, including a conditional use permit application and a text amendment application as follows. Conditional use permit CUP-355-22 is to permit a 74 megawatt photovoltaic solar array with optional battery storage and comprehensive plan amendment AC-140-22 to approve an exception to statewide planning goal 3, farmland. Applicable criteria include the MCZO Article 8 amendments, OAR 660-033-0130 (38), statewide planning goal 3, agricultural lands, MCZO Article 3, Section 3.010, Article 4, supplementary provisions, and Article 6, conditional uses. Each application will require separate commission action. Hearings are conducted concurrently as the conditional use permit is contingent upon approval of a plan amendment. The Planning Commission may take final action on the conditional use permit. The role of the Planning Commission for the plan amendment is to make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners. The Board of Commissioners hearing will take place following the Planning Commission action on both applications. I'm going to open the hearing now. I'm going to call for any abstentions or conflicts of interest from members of the Planning Commission. Hearing none, we'll move on to staff reports and summary.
I'm going to keep my video off, see if that doesn't help things here. So, Steph, I think I can share.
I put up the vicinity map.
So CP North 355-22, the request is to allow the conditional use of the construction and operation of a 74 megawatt photovoltaic solar array on up to 600 acres of land zoned exclusive farm use. The applicant's Trail Solar LLC and the property owner is Madison Ranches Land 4 LLC. The Trail Solar project is a 75 megawatt photovoltaic energy generation facility proposed by One Energy Development LLC. The project as proposed will occupy up to 600 acres on four tax lots in the 1,200 acre project tract. All impacted lands are zoned exclusive farm use and fully located in Laurel County. Trail Solar will are proposing to interconnect via the Umatilla Electric Co-op's UEC Oregon Trail substation. The applicant is concurrently seeking a Goal 3 exception for this project as it will occupy more than 12 acres of high-value farmland and more than 20 acres of arable land. I think the best thing for me to do is I'm not going to read verbatim through the conditional use permit. I'll let the applicant present their portion of the application. I'll go through the conditions though for you. So there's nine conditions. The first one is to provide the county with a final site development plan and construction schedule prior to start of construction, submit a final hazard mitigation plan and approval of the HMP by ODF&W. And we do have that. They did submit, ODF&W did submit a letter on August 26th, Gabriel McMassar, in support of the HMP. The project owner will sign and report with the Morrill County Clerk's Office a right to farm disclaimer within 30 days after the initiation of construction and provide a copy of that to the Morrill County Planning Department. Number four, comply with the decommissioning plan as submitted. Provide Morrill County Planning Department proof of the financial assurance prior to construction. Number five is obtain the necessary zoning and building permits for all buildings associated with solar photovoltaic electricity generating facility, as well as any fencing greater than 6 feet in height prior to construction. Number six is obtain approval from and meet all the requirements of the Morrill County Public Works Department for all required permanent or temporary access points and crossing points. Number seven, if required by Umatilla County, sign a road use agreement with Umatilla County Public Works and provide a copy of that to the Morrill County Planning Department. As proposed, according to the applicant, they're not going to be utilizing any roads within Morrill County during the construction process. I'm not sure about operation, but those impacts during operation would be fairly insignificant. Number eight, comply with fire code variance letter. It's attachment O in the application. The applicant's going to provide a 26-foot non-vegetative buffer around the perimeter of the project as a firebreak rather than a non-combustible base throughout the entire project where required by subsection 605.12 of the 2014 Oregon Fire Code. And then number nine, comply with a confidential mitigation agreement with CTUIR. The applicant will provide a copy of the agreement to Morrill County Planning Department prior to construction. With this, Vice Chair, I would like to remind you that we need to add the exhibits to the record. There's four of them. It's the FSEC ODO letter dated August 17th from
Wally.
That I handed those out, Stephen. So that's the email okay. From Walter from Department of Energy.
Walter Adams, the Operation and Policy ML Analyst with the Oregon Department of Energy. Exhibit G is the Habitat Mitigation Plan is submitted on August 23rd. And the ODF MW letter dated August 26th from Gabriel McNassar. And then there's a DLCD letter dated August 30th from Hillary Foote. I think that's all that I've got. Tamara, do you have anything that you'd like to add?
I do. Before I go on, Chair, would the commission agree to accept those four items as exhibits 1, 2, 3, and 4 that Stephen just mentioned? So Department of Energy letter, and just for the record.
Those all came in before the comment deadline.
They came in before the comment deadline, but after your packets were mailed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So again, Stephen, the Department of Energy, the Habitat Mitigation Plan, the letter from ODF&W, and
then the DLCD letter from Hillary Foote.
Yeah, that's right.
Does anyone on the commission have any reason to not want these as part of the record? Then they will be considered part of the original application.
Part of
I guess with that, Vice Chair, I'd like to hand it over to Tamara for the Goal 3 exception portion.
Thank you, Stephen, if that's okay, Mr. Chair. I do have one addition to Stephen's conditional use permit, and we split this. I mean, these solar projects can be a little complicated, so we split it. So Stephen did the conditional use, and I did the exception part. After conversation with Melody
Henderson,
thank you.
Henderson.
She and I talked about Fish and Wildlife is comfortable with the Habitat Mitigation Plan, and ODF&W is here tonight to provide comment or answer questions. Melody and I thought it would be a good idea to add a condition that memorializes the reporting requirements that are in the Habitat Mitigation Plan on page 19, section 6. So just to add to Stephen's list of conditions would be a condition along this line that says, applicant shall comply with reporting requirements as outlined in the Habitat Mitigation Plan, section 6, Failure to submit reports and comply with mitigation if required by ODFNW may result in permit revocation. That's just some initial language. I can reread that again. So, does it make sense for me to go ahead with the exception and then turn it to the applicants? Because they have a PowerPoint. Yeah. I think they'll do a really good job.
Yes, so I think we should cover that from
okay.
staff first.
Perfect. Thank you. So, again, we're learning as we go here. This application, and I'm looking at page 99 of 142 of your packets, page 1 of 19 of the plan amendment findings. The project would be located on up to 600 acres, four different tax lots owned by Madison Ranches LLC. The project will not permanently occupy more than 160 acres of high-value farmland as defined in ORS 195-300 and will occupy less than 1,280 acres in total. And those aren't magic numbers. Those are numbers that the Oregon legislature adopted and were embedded in administrative rules. Moving on to page 100, there's further description. I won't repeat what Stephen also mentioned. I just wanted to identify a few of the requirements for a legislative action. So on page 2 of 19, again 100 of 142, references Morrow County Zoning Ordinance Section 8 amendments. The applicant didn't see that Section 8 was applicable. They had a more narrow interpretation of that, but agreed in the end to go ahead and address it in their application, and thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. I had a broader interpretation. While this is not a map amendment, it is a text amendment insofar as approval of a Goal 3 exception will amend the text of our comprehensive plan. We just bring to the attention a lot of what I followed with this staff report and findings for the exception followed along with what this Planning Commission approved in 2018 for HARP Solar. So rather than reinventing the wheel for your previously made findings, I did some cutting and pasting, obviously, to suit this particular application. So the first finding under A requires that the Planning Commission make a finding that local conditions have changed and would warrant a change in the zoning of the subject property. Technically, you wouldn't be rezoning the subject property. Local conditions have changed insofar as the market for renewables has changed, and many farmers are looking to diversify their farm income. Under B of Section 8 requires that the public facilities and services are sufficient to support a change in designation, including but not limited to water availability relevant to both quantity and quality, waste and stormwater management, other public services, and streets and roads. And I drafted a finding that said the project will have minimal impacts to water quantity and quality, waste or stormwater, or other public infrastructure, including transportation system. Since writing this, I did learn that if this project is developed, it would remove 365 acres of land that the Port of Morrow uses for their land application of wastewater. I'm not sure how that affects that finding, or if it does or not. Just wanted to bring that to your attention. Under C requires a finding that the proposed amendment is consistent with the comprehensive plan and that there is a need for the proposal. I struggled with this. I don't know how there is a public need for a renewable energy project at a specific location. So I think it's pretty subjective, but I did include findings that would allow you to approve the Goal 3 exception request, notably economic development Goal 9, which was updated in 2016 and included a policy that said the Goal 9 policy supports the county's ability to maintain and improve energy generation and movement in and through Morrow County. Moving on to D, for an amendment in Morrill County, the request, the application does not directly impact specific public health and welfare. I think that my finding concluded that I didn't find or note anything that would cause concern for public health or welfare, at least not directly. Under item four, applicable statewide planning goals, which we're required to adopt findings when we do a goal exception or any legislative amendment. Goal one is citizen involvement. Our public hearings and notice, our 35-day notice to Department of Land Conservation and Development substantially meets that. Statewide planning goal three, farmland. This is where it gets complicated. And I did borrow from the applicant, they did a very good job with their findings. And remember, for legislative and quasi-judicial, the applicant is required to demonstrate. So if the burden of proof is on the applicant, we can use that as staff as well. So as summarized in the soils analysis, which was an attachment to Stephen's conditional use permit, the project will occupy or cover up to 600 acres of land in a tract that triggers the Goal 3 exception. I think their attorney, Elaine Albrecht, can cover much better than I could the legal framework for a goal exception that begins on page 104 and then moves on to page 105. On page 105 begins the administrative rule, which requires that uses that are not specifically provided for in that rule shall justify why state policy embodied in the goals should not apply. In other words, why should this land be used for anything other than farming? And again, borrowing the proof that the applicant provided, I note here that the following sections demonstrate that the applicant can satisfy the statute under what's called the other reasons test, and again, Attorney Albrecht can cover that well. I do note that I failed to remove their internal section numbers, so I'd recommend we scratch those. Moving on to page 142, where middle of the page it says Goal 3 exception, it should have a subtitle, the Goal 13 energy conservation. A little editorial note, I've always thought it's odd that we, in statewide planning, it's been a very comprehensive statewide program for since the early 80s. We have a goal for energy conservation. We don't have a goal for energy development. So it's a really odd juxtaposition to show that you comply with a goal that's recommending that a development or an exception show how you're conserving energy when what you're trying to approve is a new energy generation project. Just my own note. But I think they did a good job here of noting different findings in our Goal 13 section of our comp plan and the different policies, including policies to encourage renewable and energy efficient systems, among others. Page 107 of 142 is the economic element. And it's my understanding Morrill County updated that just a few years ago and included some findings about the economic value of renewable energy development. On page 108 of 142, almost to the bottom of the page, where they are justifying the Goal 3 exception, they are... Part of the justification is that Oregon has clean energy targets and a renewable portfolio standard, which is not part of the land use program, but they are showing that as evidence for a need for this particular project. They conclude that the development, construction, and ongoing operation of the project will deliver economic benefits to the Morrill County community. I would propose that we strike one sentence where it says property taxes estimated at over $12 million for the life of the project. I talked to Mike, our county assessor, and
he couldn't confirm or deny that information until he actually sees what the project is. So I don't think it's really fair to have a specific number. I'm sure Vice Chair Sweet can add to that also. I'd be more comfortable striking a specific number because we just don't really know, particularly if things like incentives are built into the project. So beginning at, where it says property taxes to the end of that sentence, I'd propose striking that from the draft findings. And then moving on to public facilities and services, the goal 11 element requires that for an exception, they address the basic framework of public services under general policies. In that section, the county has a policy that says programs should be continued to develop additional sources of electric power and other power sources to assure adequate service to the county area and its projected growth. I don't think this development has any intention to serve just the local area, but not that they would oppose that. That's the particular finding in our county comprehensive plan. And I don't know of any county that's ever constrained export of energy. I just know that that is the policy in our comprehensive plan. And then moving on, under the additional reasons test, which the applicant can better explain, they're required to show that this project and this specific location has special features or quality that necessitate locating the project in this location. And I think they'll do a much better job of making that argument. The primary justification is it is immediately adjacent to a Yamato Electric Co-op substation, the Oregon Trail substation. And then moving on under ORS 197732 2CB, it requires some sort of analysis that areas that do not require a new exception cannot reasonably accommodate the use. How did that go? I don't want to read everything. And again, I think the applicant will do a better job of explaining why other areas aren't as feasible as this one. And they also prepared what's called the Goal 3 Alternatives Analysis. So if not at this location, then why other locations were not suitable. And that is an attachment to these findings called Goal 3 Alternatives Analysis. I do want to make a note about the Historic, Cultural, and Archaeological Report. It was prepared by Tetra Tech and submitted to us as a confidential document. They did make some findings that the local tribes would like to remain confidential, so we do have a copy of that in our office. You'll have to guess take our word for it, but Tetra Tech, the professional archaeologist and engineer, provided that information. Then I would like to move forward to page 114 of 142 to address Goal 12, transportation. At least as preliminarily anticipated, all of the construction traffic, heavy equipment hauling will impact the Umatilla County side, which is why Stephen included a condition in the conditional use permit about obtaining a road use agreement. Then by conclusion on page 116 of 142, I wrote a finding that says the county can reasonably find that a Goal 3 exception is justified for the project area, 623 acres. They've addressed the statute and goal in Section 8. Note that agencies were notified, and I think that's all. That concludes my part. If you have any questions, happy to answer them.
Okay, do any of the commissioners have any questions for staff? Wayne's got a hand up.
I did. Is this a good time to ask?
Yes, cursor. Wayne's there. This is the cursor.
Oh, that's a cursor. Okay, yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Well, is it normal to go ahead and just, sorry, I'm suffocating this live. To just not follow the guidelines and go ahead and approve it. I don't understand why we're going forward with it when it's over the 12 acres and the 20 acres and the all the acres that's listed in the state ORSs as well as our local zoning. I'm confused as to why we're considering an approval, a conditional approval.
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner Killian, I probably didn't do a very good job of explaining it. I think the application materials that we have, they do stay under those state thresholds, which is why they have a pretty odd-shaped solar array. If you look at their design, they are limiting the acreage up, so it's no more than 600 acres that's in the high-value area. And they're under 1,280 in total, so they do comply with those thresholds. If they were over that amount, we wouldn't have the authority to approve it.
That letter from Hillary Foot, I thought, kind of lined out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, that's
the
right.
The issues well on.
She did.
Because it is very confusing.
It's confusing at best, and even us planners have to noodle over it. And I don't know, Commissioner Killian, if you had the chance to look at the email that I forwarded out this afternoon from Hillary Foot.
I did. I looked at it, but to me, it still didn't make a lot of sense, and I apologize for what I don't know. But I was just confused over why we... are moving forward with something that went against our own policy. But maybe I don't know how to read them.
Yeah. If you mention specific policies, we could address those. But I just replied to the acreage. And remember, staff prepares a staff report and draft findings, and if you disagree, that is, that's the way the process works. We can modify those findings for sure. And it might make sense to listen to the applicant and their attorney make a more compelling case for why they do comply with our standards.
Okay, no, I totally agree. I'm very interested in hearing that. And I also just wanted to confirm that, you know, it was cited, and I emailed you this afternoon about the opinion of the commission back in 2015. And I was just curious if back in 2015, if we set up some guidelines for the future of Morrow County when it comes to renewable energy resources, like how we were going to approve these, if they were just going to come through us and keep on going, or if we had a percentage of land that we were willing to commit to it, or if it was just going to be a free-for-all on renewable energy in Morrow County.
Yeah, and Stephanie or Stephen has that outlined, your email. Is that right? Oh, that's Hillary's. Okay. I'll just read quickly what Commissioner Killian is referencing. So today she sent an email with a included a section from Goal 9. I should have made copies of this. I'm sorry I didn't. Specifically the economic element. And she asked me and an advice at council, I said, no, don't send it to the Planning Commission. The appropriate place to share concerns or bring up issues is during the commission meeting, at least as a commission member. So Commissioner Killian raised this, and the Goal 9 of the Morrow County Comprehensive Plan. And it has this language. It says, upon undertaking a substantial update to the plan in 2015, the Planning Commission opined that economics is something that should play a role throughout the plan. The Planning Commission determined that to best understand the role of economics, the best place to begin an update was with the economic element. Through discussions, the Planning Commission hypothesized that the four economic sectors should be evaluated: the largest industrial sector, agriculture and food processing, energy and tourism. The economic element will provide the foundation for the economic situation in Morrow County in 2015 and will design a program and set forth policies for land use purposes for the next 20 years and beyond. And then it also has a paragraph under focused economic sectors, energy sectors. And it reads, the first comprehensive plan identified the vast opportunity available in and around Mora County relative to energy, its development, movement, and consumption. For purposes of land use planning, energy may be best considered into four major categories: generation and related transmission, bulk market transmission, local service delivery, and consumption. Comprehensive plan goals and policies found later in this element need to outline the benefits of the energy sector and provide mechanisms to maintain and improve energy generation and movement in and through Morrow County. And so commissioners also said her question is that during the discussion that occurred in 2015, were there new guidelines created to monitor alternative energy opportunities? She says, basically, were the commissioners suggesting that we use all available ground for this, or was there a method to balance land use of some sort? The term that stands out is the verbiage that I read, opined. It seems irrelevant to me unless there were guidelines adopted. And finally, she says, next, upon reading the latest addition to the packet, it seems they are not within the requirements set forth by the state regarding high-value farmland. Why would we make an exception for a short-term benefit? They state elsewhere in their application that they have not signed a contract specifically stating where and how the energy will be used. I totally understand energy usage and that it is fluid, but this seems a little bit ambiguous to me. Thank you, Mary. So I can just address the piece. I think it's a... to answer your question, I am not aware that the Planning Commission adopted any specific guidelines. I think the state of Oregon is moving in that direction. Anything more specific than the Section 8 in our zoning ordinance, Administrative Rule 660, and then the ORS 195. So hopefully I characterized that well for you, Commissioner Killian, and that's for the commission to consider.
Are there any other commissioners who have questions for staff before we open up the hearing? Then we'll move to proponents of this proposed change. Do we have?
We do. So.
Shall I give my presentation?
Yes. Are you doing this or is?
I think Steven's going to run it and I'll just tell him to change the slide. Okay.
Could you state your name and spell your last name, please?
Yes. My name is Blake Bjornson. Last name is B-J-O-R-N-S-O-N.
My name is Tanner Gillespie. G-I-L-L-E-S-P-I-E.
Representing?
One Energy Renewables.
Okay,
thank you.
And are you going to invite Elaine, or are you doing this, and then Elaine?
It'd be mostly me.
Okay.
Yep. So good evening, commissioners. Thank you for having us here. My name is Blake. I'm an associate director of development at One Energy, and I've got Tanner here.
We need, that's right, we probably need to move the microphone a little bit. There's a little messaging
difficult to hear.
I was wondering
from
the distance.
Here,
if I could move, if they want to hear closer.
Let's just scoot you up so you're closer to the owl.
I was slightly worried about that. I saw the distance.
Oh, thank you. I didn't.
Can you hear me a little bit better now?
Make sure you use the outside voice. It's
okay. So Blake, or Tanner and I are here, and As Tamara mentioned, we have Elaine Albrecht, who's our counsel, on the Zoom. Next slide, please. So I'm going to run through just a quick introduction on solar, and then we'll get into some details on trail. So you can see forward two, please.
That's just what it was. Sorry.
Good note.
All right, so One Energy Renewables, we are a Seattle-based company. We just recently hit 50 employees, been active since about 2009, developing projects, including the HARP Solar project that Tamara mentioned earlier. We've been active in Oregon since 2010 with a number of projects up and running. And you go ahead and hit the next slide, please. This is just a brief overview. We're active all over the country. There's a couple of stars that we're about to add. Most notably in Washington, we've got a project that will be going into construction at the end of this year. Next slide, please. So a little bit about solar as a good organ product. As we've mentioned, the Clean Energy Targets legislation, House Bill 2021, that directs utilities to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 100% of the baseline emissions. This project can help contribute towards that goal. It's compatible with agriculture and provides supplemental income for landowners. That's a big driver for why our landowner, Jake Madison, is interested in the project. It's not a permanent use. At the end of its life, the land can be restored and go back to agricultural use. Once operational, it's quiet, there's no emissions, and it's very low maintenance. There's not a lot of traffic going back and forth. And then after construction, we reseed the area with a native seed mix, which can actually help improve water and soil quality. These are kind of four buckets of some of the ways that we see communities benefiting from our projects. The property taxes that were mentioned, there are the during operations, there's recurring annual expenditures, so that's both in the form of lease payments to the landowner and operations maintenance within the county, you know, spending within the county for the operations and maintenance. And then it's things like vegetation maintenance, things like that. And then during construction, there's local spending, not just the direct spending on the project, but also, you know, any workers that are here to, you know, for hotels and things like that. And then jobs and labor is the last one. I'm going to run through the solar basics really quickly. I think people are more familiar with solar now. These are some slides that as the industry grew, but the PV panels are the same ones that you see on houses. The thing I'll make a note of is that they have an anti-reflective coating on them. The racking is steel racking that gets driven into the ground, and there's a beam, that a tracker that holds the panels and rotates from east to west throughout the day to maximize the generation. Next slide, please. We've got inverters and interconnection infrastructure that helps, that makes the electricity usable for the grid. So it converts it into a usable product and then puts it onto the grid. Next slide, please. A little bit about the battery energy storage system. So batteries can help smooth out the generation, smooth out some of those peaks in the daytime, and be able to provide power at other times of the day. One thing I definitely wanted to note was there are some National Fire Protection Association standards for these types of systems, the NFPA 855, and all of our projects will comply with that. Next slide, please. And then a couple, you know, we have security fencing and roads within the project that will comply with the fire code. Okay, so yeah, getting into the project specifics a little bit more. This is on within the Madison Ranches property. You can go to the next slide, please. Just a couple pictures of the site. Next slide. Okay, so a couple things I wanna just make clear, kind of some definitions in our project. So the project tract is the entire 1,280 acres that's owned by Madison Ranches 4 there. The project area extent is a micro-siting boundary. So it's the red area that you see there. That's 623 acres where we did all the study work within. And what we're asking is that we microsite within that area so that we can, between now and when the thing goes into construction, we can design it and work around any issues that might come up during construction. So we'll design within that micrositing boundary up to 600 acres. And we'll come back to that a little bit when we talk about some of the high-value farmland, things like that. So just in terms of this project, or in terms of this site, there's no Class 1 or Class 2 soils, no impacts to wetlands or floodplains here. There are no existing buildings there. As you'll hear from ODFW, the wildlife impacts are not significant because of the agricultural impacts here. And those impacts that there are, we're mitigating through a habitat mitigation plan. The landowner will be able to continue to use the remainder of his property. And I do want to, on the ideal location, so UBC just built, if you look at the far upper left of that, there's a brand new Oregon Trail substation right there that was just built 2 years ago by UBC. That is the critical piece of why we chose this location. We won't require additional transmission lines to get anywhere. We're getting into the grid right at that spot. And that, along with relatively flat land, it's generally a less productive piece of property for the landowner. He's going to be able to use his water rights in other locations that he says he'll be able to produce higher value crops. And very minimal impacts to neighbors, with the nearest neighbor being over a mile and a half away. Go ahead, next slide, please. Just a little bit about construction. We anticipate it'll take about 12 months. We're thinking that that would start in early 2025. At peak, we would have an estimated 300 construction folks out there, and a number of different trades, including electricians, operators, truck drivers, etc. The project life is expected to be 35 years. And like I said, once it's constructed, it's pretty minimal maintenance. So we don't anticipate having full-time staff out there. It's an as-needed maintenance check, and then the vegetation management and panel washing. A little bit about decommissioning. What we've proposed, and this is part of, what we propose is to provide financial assurance for 100% of the cost of decommissioning at either 10 years after the project is operational, or at the end of the PPA term. The PPA is the power purchase agreement, and as was noted, we don't have a power purchase agreement for this project. I'll talk a little bit about status at the end. So it's unknown exactly how long that power purchase agreement would be for, but it would be the later of either of those dates is what we're proposing. Next slide, please. So throughout the project development, we've been working on this project since 2017 and consulting with a lot of different groups, including C2IR, ODFW, Fish and Wildlife, Department of State Lands. I mean, you can see the list here, but we've tried to reach out to all the appropriate folks. The Navy, I will say, is one. You know, with the bombing range being close by, that was an important consultation to have, and they don't have any issues with the project. Next slide. Here's kind of a summary. I think we've covered most of this, but done wetland delineations, wildlife surveys, cultural surveys, and that's all as part of your packet. Next slide, please. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the jurisdiction. So this is kind of just, there's two levels here. So on high-value farmland, if you impact less than, the law states that if you impact less than 160 acres of high-value farmland, then you can go through a conditional use permit and Goal 3 exception. When you exceed the 160 is when you must go through the state process. Same for arable lands, but the higher 1,280 acre threshold. So to go to the next slide here, so this is a little bit of a matrix of our soils analysis, which is the attachment, I think it's attachment C, that has much more detail on this, but you can see that within the project area extent, so that larger micro-siting boundary, there are the 284 acres of the high-value farmland, with a note that 13, so some of it qualifies under different definitions, and there is a little bit of overlap. I think if you go to the next slide, actually. Yeah, so this shows the overlap. So there's many different definitions of high-value farmland. The two that are applicable, well, three that are applicable here are, one, class one or class two soils. We have none of those, so none of it is high-value because of that. Two is within the American viticultural areas, and it has certain aspect or certain characteristics, topographical characteristics, slope, elevation, and aspect. So it's a patchwork of high value farmland you have because of the AVA. And that's a data set that you can download from the state. So what you're seeing in red there are what is considered high value farmland because it's within the AVA and meets those topographical criteria. What you see in the yellow, yellow is, that's the third definition of high-value farmland that's applicable here, which is if it was within the place of use for irrigation in 2007. That's the way the law is written for that definition of high-value farmland. So there was a place of use for water there. It was never used there. That place of use was moved later. But in 2007, there was a place of use there, so that whole circle is considered high-value farmland. And so you see the overlap is there. So before we move on, I just want to make it very clear that there are more than 160 acres of high-value farmland within the project area extent, but in no case will our project area be impacting more than 160 acres, which is why we stay under the threshold. So we're asking for that micro-siting flexibility with the condition that we cannot impact more than 160 acres. And so this layout, and we'll talk a little bit more about the layout, but this layout is very much a preliminary layout, and I would anticipate that it would move. This blue, what you're seeing in blue there is the current fence line, basically. We're already with the landowner looking at some revisions to that, and I would expect that to change. And that's exactly the point of having the micro-siting boundary.
Chair, may I ask a question? So you're asking for permission from the commission to approve the project area, but to not to exceed 160 acres.
Right.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about, if I can see those correctly, there's four circles that will either be removed from production or adapted. Is that right?
Yeah, so the current irrigation pivots?
Yes.
Yeah, so the landowner plans to move his water rights prior to construction off of those onto, he's got, I know, some other plans, and he wishes that he could be here. He had a family obligation that he couldn't make it tonight, but he did provide a letter of support, and I think he chatted with you too. Mm-hmm. So he plans to move the water rights and use them elsewhere for anything that we impact. And like I said, with the, you know, this is the preliminary site plan boundary, and you know, one of the things that Jake and I were talking about was at least getting it off of that southernmost pivot to keep that whole thing available to him. So we're looking at some revisions already to work within that micro-siting boundary, but redesigning it a little bit. Next slide, please. ORS 215-446 is new relative to when we were here for HARP. This is some additional, a 2019 bill imposing some additional standards. This is where the habitat mitigation plan components come from. And we have worked with ODFW to put together a plan and can certainly comply with meeting those reporting requirements. On the historic, you also heard that there were the confidential reports, and we're working with C2IR. We're going back and forth on that agreement, so that's well in progress. And then the decommissioning is also a part of that ORS 215-446, so I think we've complied with that. So, Elaine, I'll put you a little bit on the spot, I think. If you can cover this slide, please.
Sure. For the record, my name is Elaine Albridge. Am I coming through okay?
Yes.
Okay. I'm with Davis Strait Tremaine in Portland, and I'm outside council, permitting council for One Energy. As Blake mentioned, we were before Morrow County for the HARP project on a very similar application package. And so are glad to be here before you today. With Trail, which has been in progress for quite a while. So with respect to the Goal 3 exception, I just want to touch back on Commissioner Killian's questions of why we were taking a Goal 3 exception, in that this DLCD rules require an exception to Goal 3 if a solar facility is going to exceed 12 acres of high-value farmland. And it requires an exception if you're going to exceed 20 acres of arable land. Those acre thresholds are very low. They have not been updated over time, and you'll notice that the thresholds between county jurisdiction and FSEC jurisdiction are very divergent from what those Goal 3 thresholds are. So pretty much any utility scale project going before local review or county review or FSEC review is going to trigger a Goal 3 exception. So this Goal 3 exception for trail is modeled after the Goal 3 exception that Morrow County approved for HARP, which would follow the 2015-2016 comprehensive plan amendments, which were, I think, a really intentional effort by Morrow County to declare its policy statements. And so one of the questions that came up was about, did Morrow County adopt any guidelines under Goal 9? And so I'll just point out, there's on page 108 of the record packet that you have, there's Goal 3 and specifically Policy A. And so that goes to the real heart of what we are asking for today is Goal 3 is diversify local businesses, industries, and commercial activities and promote the economic growth and stability of the county. And Policy 3 specifically is to encourage local producers to new markets for local products and to seek out new products that are in demand in the marketplace and that can be produced locally. So in our Goal 3 exception, we really talk about the demand for renewable energy and how this is a new marketplace for Morrow County. And in particular, this site is unique in that it doesn't require any transmission or gentie lines because it's proximate to the UEC's new substation. So just to touch on that. But in our application materials, we addressed the reasons test for why this project satisfies the state requirements for a Goal 3 exception. We provided that looking at Goal 3 and Goal 9 and Goal 11, that's in the county's comprehensive plan. And then we also looked at the site characteristics for the proposed project location and then performed an alternatives analysis, which is actually quite robust. And I think if I got the number right, you'll see the alternatives analysis, really the meat of it, is starts on page 118, looking at land that wouldn't require a Goal 3 exception and the conclusions for supporting why there is not such land available. In addition, we looked at the long-term SE consequences, which were based primarily on our CUP impacts analysis, and then finally looked at the compatibility with adjacent uses, which was farmland, and so that is supported by the significant impacts test for farmland that's in the CUP.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, getting towards the end of the slides here, so this is a more detailed view of the layout, the preliminary layout, which is also an attachment that you have in your packet. We would provide the final layout prior to construction. In terms of setbacks, we're complying with all the setbacks that are in the code. We have, I believe the next, can you go to the next slide, please? Yes, so on access, it's been mentioned a couple times, so it's interesting that actually we're access, the only public access roads that we're using is from the top arrow to the bottom arrow, off of the interstate, using a Umatilla County road, and then going on to a Madison private road from there into the project area. So we have spoken with the Umatilla Public Works Director, and he advised at this time no requirement for a road use agreement, but happy to comply with that if needed. Okay. Next slide. So getting back to just kind of bigger picture status, we've got a few of our buckets checked. We've got land, we've got interconnection to the grid, and we've got a great solar resource. So we're here tonight, of course, to get to talk with you all about the permit. And as has been said a couple times, we're working with a number of prospective off-takers for the purchase of the power that's generated. And permit is oftentimes a risk that is, oftentimes required to have done before proceeding into that next step. It's a risk that the off-taker oftentimes does not want to wear. And so this is sometimes, the developer comes to request a permit without the power purchase agreement, it's kind of a chicken and egg situation. So, but we are active in several conversations with a number of different potential off-takers. And that is my presentation. So happy to take questions.
So any questions from staff or from the commission?
So you mentioned the port project water. Mm-hmm. Where, what did you say it effect was taking 300 acres out of that? Would that be repurposed somewhere else? Was that?
I don't know. And I just learned that in the last week or so. I think it's 365 acres. So I'm not positive of the total area of the land application, but 365 is a pretty good chunk. I know Jacob Kane is on the phone or on the Zoom, so he can probably speak to that a lot better than I could. So that will probably affect the port's land application permit with Department of Environmental Quality. And full disclosure, I didn't provide notice to DEQ for the plan amendment, and maybe Stephen did for the CUP. I doubt it. It's not typically something, an agency we would provide notice to. Let me see. I don't see it for a solar project.
No, I just felt questions that
yep.
That people will probably, just because of the issues with water. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It's a good question, yeah. Actually, Stephen did. It just says Oregon DEQ, but we... for the CUP, but not the plan amendment. I'm not sure what office that went to. It's a pretty big agency.
I don't really have a question for the attorney, but I do want to state that I felt like a blubbering idiot when I asked my first question. And now after hearing his explanation and his definitions, I hope you all understand why I felt that way. I knew there were some contradictions in there, and I appreciate your explanations of how they work for you. But before I could even ask my question, I didn't even know what I was asking completely, and I appreciate the definitions, clarifications, and all that. Thank you.
It is very confusing, Mary, to try to walk through that and figure it out.
The soil is incredibly complex. Yeah. Yeah.
It's what happens when the Oregon legislature and interest groups create local land use rules. And you have four different sets of rules. It's crazy. It's Full Employment Act for some people.
I'm going to ask you just, I think it's important. And Mary, I think I really want to make a point. This is, you know, Justin Ellison, County Council. But before doing that, I was on the Planning Commission for several years and doing this. And it is complicated. And even sitting in the meetings, but also when I was attending these more and more, the concern is commissioners of the public, like, oh, do I ask that question? Is it going to be a dumb question? And the problem is, everybody else has the same question you do, right? You're not really the only one. I was trying to remember to ask the same questions. I was always concerned. So I actually think those are fantastic questions, because not only that, it also gives the applicant an opportunity to respond, realizing if there are concerns or questions, they want to be able to respond. They're not going to know what's in your mind, commissioners. Mm-hmm. You know, your concerns, let them know so they can answer it. If they can't, that's an issue. But that's the only way they're going to know your concerns, too. So I think that was an excellent question for it. I just want to make sure, just to mention that as both sides sitting on the commission.
Are there
makes for a
any,
thank you.
Are there any other questions for the One Energy people?
Yeah, this is Commissioner Thompson. I've got a lot of questions about this one. We say we're only taking 160 acres out, this high-value farm ground. I think I could argue that all day. Just the footprint of this is going to decommission... what, four, five, six circles? And we say we're going to move the water rights. Where are we moving them to? Is it Alamoro County? Is it in Umatilla County? Can it even be done? the benefit to the county, I don't know that that's true. I'm sure those circles employ more people. Once that's built, then the project will, after that, for the next 25 years, given the port's position and the county's position with nitrates, we're going to diminish the area that we have to put those nitrated waters on. Yeah, I've got a lot of questions about it, and I really disagree with the, I mean, I know what farm high quality farm ground is, the definition that you're using, just the simple fact that the footprint of this project is going to take out, I don't know, 600, 700, 800 acres. I haven't measured it, but yeah, those are my concerns and my questions. By the letter of it, you may be right, but by the effect of it, I think we're way off. That's all I got.
Any response from?
I think the only response.
If I can jump in, yeah. I think what we'd like to do is if we could save time for rebuttal and hear the kind of the questions of the commission, and then also it'd be great if we could hear from any public that wanted to provide public testimony, and then we could collectively respond at one time.
Okay. So any other commissioner questions?
Well, mine is indirect towards this. It's not towards them specifically. It's not like I'm focused on this particular project. I just want to be clear that the Warren County Commission group has a plan for our county that going forward, when we get these proposals, that we're not just pushing them through because they quote unquote meet the criteria, make the mark somehow, and we don't just give up all our farmland for energy use. I don't see that anywhere, and if anyone could direct me towards a plan or a guideline that we have set, that would be fantastic. If not, I think we need to talk about that.
Maybe later.
The plan, I think Tamara addressed that. I don't think there's any specifics as to what that plan is. It was, yeah, that we should have one, and the next step did not happen.
I think that's right. I'd just respond, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes.
I hear what you're saying, and I think this we should have that discussion, I think, out of the context of this application. And just so you know, offline, I can share with you, and we could have a work session with the Planning Commission in the future, if you'd like, to look at our local standards. We can be more strict than the state, if that's what you would like, in order to protect more farm ground here. So there is a path forward, and you're exactly right. After 2016, there was nothing more specific developed. And again, maybe we have a work session at some point in the future on that topic. But the criteria that are in place at the time the application is filed are the criteria by which the Planning Commission must evaluate the application. So we'll put a parking, we'll put a big, big sticky note on that one, Commissioner Killian, and talk about it outside of a public hearing.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commission? Is there anyone else who would like to speak in favor of this project?
Okay,
thanks. Well, moving on then, we will ask for our opponents. Are there any opponents who would like to testify against the project?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I'm Jacob Kane. I'm at 71833 Meadow Loop in Boardman, Oregon. Tonight I'm representing the Port of Morrow, located in Boardman, Oregon. And we do oppose this application, as it's been spoke about several times tonight. This application, this development, would ultimately decrease our wastewater land application acres inside of our current DEQ WPCF permit. And I don't know the exact acreage, but I think it's been thrown out there a couple times of 364 acres or so. And just to address a couple of questions that have been brought up, as everybody might know, there have been some complications with DEQ in our region recently. To pick up those acres and to put them somewhere else would be very difficult. Any new land application acres would have to go through a full permit modification, which includes public testimony and all kinds of good stuff with that process. It would include a very large investment to include monitoring wells and different types of infrastructure to accommodate that. You know, the biggest hurdle that we would see in picking those acres up and moving them somewhere else would be this DEQ no longer is letting us add additional winter application acres. They basically cut it off, and as of 2025, we're not going to be able to do any winter application. These acres that you're looking at now are currently inside of our boundary that we can winter apply on. And as some of you might know, we've been having issues as it already exists of staying inside of the current DEQ regulations on nitrogen application rates. That those are an ever-changing story in the state's eyes. In the last few years, we've been struggling with some of those new regulations. So in summary, the port's definitely opposed to this development because of those reasons. And let me know if you have any questions.
Any questions from staff or commission?
Staff question, just for me, just for understanding, sitting back here, I apologize, man. So the port doesn't own the property, but there's a contract of some sort where you're able to put this effluent on. Is that how this occurs, Mr. Kane?
So there's an agreement between the landowner and the Port of Morro to apply wastewaters. I don't have that agreement in front of me, but yes, there is an agreement in place, and that those acres are bound in our current WPCF permit for land application. Now, whether that hampers development from an owner's perspective, I would have to consult an attorney on. I am not positive. But like I said, I am just catching up to speed on this. I have not done a lot of research on it, as I haven't been in the know on this development until recently.
Any other questions for Mr. Kane? Anyone else that would like to speak in opposition to this energy project? Then we'll move on to anybody else who has comments or neutral testimony dealing with the project.
Finally, you can have two cookies for waiting so long.
We won't be long. Looks like we have ODF and W.
We do.
So ODFW, Steve Cherry, C-H-E-R-R-Y. And
Gabe McNassar, M-C-N-A-S-S-A-R.
So Trail Solar has reached out to Gabe and I, and we've worked with them over the last year or so, 2 years, whatever it's been. Working over wildlife issues. Part of the new solar rules require that that there's a mitigation plan adopted and in place prior to the conditional use permit being issued. And we did finalize that, and we sent in a letter to you guys in the last week stating that that was the case. So we appreciate working with these guys on all their wildlife stuff and their habitat mitigation plan. And if you guys have any questions for us, we'd be happy to answer them.
Sure.
Okay.
Just to clarify, ODFW does support the habitat mitigation plan.
Yes.
Okay, great. And then, as I mentioned during the staff report for the conditional use permit, adding the condition that requires the reporting as outlined in the habitat mitigation plan. Mm-hmm. That way it's in the plan, but also in the conditions that our compliance planner will help enforce.
Okay. Any questions from the commission for Fish and Wildlife? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay, now we'll rebuttal testimony for the applicant.
Yeah.
Hey,
things if I can jump in here. This is Eileen Albrecht again, for the record. I just will note for the record that this is the first time that we learned about the Port of Morrow's concerns today. And so we were not aware of their concerns prior to this hearing or in preparation of the application. So we understand that you probably have some questions about that, as we do also. So we're going to need some additional time to reach out to the port to have those discussions. So I think that's just one thing. If there's specific questions about the soils, I'm happy to go over that analysis and talk through why certain soils are one classification and why irrigated soils are not high value under the state definition. So if the commission would like that, I'm happy to do that. But otherwise, I'll hand it back to the One Energy folks in the room.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add other than it was our understanding that the landowner had been in conversation with the port about the project and understand these are some new issues that are coming up. So definitely look forward to working with them on seeing if we can find a solution there.
So my suggestion at this point would be at the pleasure of staff and the commission of whether we wanted to continue to a date certain with the hearing in order to provide additional information on this, or I think maybe what my recommendation would be to close the public hearing but keep the record open so we can have further conversations with the court and then provide additional information in writing and then appear again before the Planning Commission for deliberations and a decision. Open Tamara to what your thoughts are on that before request.
Yes, staff, what would your preference be?
So the keeping it open for the date, continuing the hearing today sort of keeps the record open, there's more testimony coming in, of course, more information, arguments, things like that. It could delay, if you think, was it those next hearings, sometimes you can then have it to the record open again, which in the past we've had these kind of drag on a little bit longer. If there's more questions, it's okay that way, I think, to do that. But that's the only issue that comes up sometimes. I think I've seen in the past. If we close the public record, allowing the close the public hearing, leave the record to be open, there might be written responses back and forth, but it's hard to hear from the folks, right? You just get the written responses. Yeah. You don't get that same ability to go back and ask the questions the commissioners may have. So that's just kind of my thoughts. But Tamara, what do you think?
Yeah, thanks. If you close the hearing and keep the record open, you still need to wait until another public hearing to make a final decision.
Yeah.
So I think it's more advantageous for everyone, and particularly the decision makers, the Planning Commission, to allow this to continue at the next hearing. We wouldn't repeat what was said tonight, but to invite testimony that's in addition to this. I mean, they don't need to sit through the whole conversation again in the subsequent month. Otherwise, you close the hearing, you allow the record open, and then your next decision is made on the record. And you might have questions that staff can't answer, but others can answer at your next hearing. Right, Elaine? Is that right?
Yeah.
I explain it right? Okay.
Yeah. I think, the procedurally here is we could continue the hearing to a date time certain and limit the testimony at that hearing to simply addressing the Port of Morrow's concerns, at which point the record would be open until that time also, so we could provide additional information in response to those concerns, and then at that hearing, the public hearing and the record could close potentially and then move to deliberation. So my suggestion would be that we limit testimony at the continued hearing to just this issue of responding to the court's concerns.
Yeah. So the next, for everyone to consider, the next public hearing is September, we just did this today, September 27th.
Yes.
September 27th. in Irrigan at 6:30. So it's at seven. Thank you. I did 6:30 for too many years. Thank you. At the Northmore Annex in Irrigan at 7 p.m. on September 27th.
Would that take a motion or just consensus?
A motion. Well, I mean, yeah, I'd say motion to continue, or we're closing the hearing, or we do it.
Well, either one. I mean,
yeah, I'd say the motion to continue the hearing.
Okay.
You can do it by consensus if everybody's nodding. It's
but
hard
it's
to get nods.
It's easier to do it officially.
I think that's right, to continue the hearing. But however that works, as staff, I'd like really clear direction. So are you specifically limited? If you agree to continue the hearing to September 27th at 6:30 in Irrigan.
Or 7.
Sorry. I'm old and it's late. Sorry about that. Are you limiting the next hearing to only address the Port of Morrow's issue, or to limit the hearing so that only new information is allowed? Otherwise, the next hearing will be very, very narrowly focused. And Elaine, you also mentioned that you might want to address the high-value soils and add to that your explanation of that. And
yeah,
either way is fine.
Well, I just think we're happy to address questions in rebuttal at the next hearing, if there are any. But I don't think we're going to be providing any new information on soils.
Oh, you won't be. Okay. So,
I mean, maybe as it relates to the responding to the Port of Morrow's concerns, but otherwise we just would refer to the soils analysis that's in the record.
Can I ask a quick question, Tamara?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Yeah, you'll ask the chair, please. Yes.
Chair, sorry.
Yes, go ahead, Mary.
Is it okay? I'm sorry. Commissioner Thompson had some legitimate questions as well. Are they going to be answered at any point?
We can address those now. We could also address them in writing during the open record period, which might be more helpful to include some additional figures to show kind of how the analysis works for the irrigated land. So happy to do either at the pleasure of the commission.
I like to read. I would like them in writing.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent,
yes,
excellent.
Yes,
did you hear that,
okay.
Emily? Commissioner Exley?
In writing?
Yes. So
okay.
I think the cleanest
Thank
thing
you.
To do, if council agrees, is to continue the hearing and to allow additional testimony by parties that, not to duplicate what was already said tonight, but to put a finer point on any items that need further clarification. So you don't all have to sit through this again.
It also allows more ability to add some more comments to not just be the record, not limiting certain things, but not being repetitive, of course, not having to do the whole presentation over, but kind of allows more information to come in, continue the hearing to the set date and time.
And Chair, what I would propose is that staff, you know, the additional condition, there's actually two, we can present you with a clean copy of this, so between now and when the packets go out, you don't have to bring your old materials or your, we'll present you with a full packet next time so you have the full picture so you can read it in its entirety. And if you want us to show a redacted version, compare from tonight to what you'll see in September, we can do that as well. Additional materials and any changes.
So do I have a motion from the Planning Commission?
I don't know how to word it. I'll make the motion to keep the record open, right?
And continue the hearing.
I'm gonna do what Justin said.
It's all right. Continue the hearing to the exact what date?
Yes, and we know it's at 7 p.m., and it's at September
27th
at the North Morrow Annex in Irrigan.
Okay. So that's the motion to continue the hearing to that date certain, as just stated.
Okay, a second.
I'll second it.
Who was that?
Is that Rod?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Rod. It's Samson. It's Mr. Samson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, it's been moved by Stacy and seconded by Rod to continue the conditional use C CUP-355-22 and plan amendment AC-140-22 hearing to September
27th.
For additional review.
At 7 p.m.
Everybody, is there a question on this? Okay, everybody that's in favor, please do a roll call vote.
Great, yeah. Commissioner Killian, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Taylor, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Seitz, how do you vote?
Nay.
Nay? Commissioner Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Smith, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Ekstrom, how do you vote?
Aye.
And Vice Chair?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries.
Okay. Motion carries.
Okay, so motion carries. So this hearing will be continued until our normal September meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll see you next month. Thanks.
Never a dull moment.
I was trying to read something about soil when you were saying exact wording, so that's why I was like, oh.
So crap. Now I'll turn it back to you, Chair. Thanks. Next on the agenda. Adjournment.
Did we want to talk about the change in the date?
Okay. Any other business?
Under correspondence, you have the planning monthly update from August 10th.
Okay.
And then at our staff meeting today, we were anticipating our October and November, and what we would like to propose is that we not have a meeting in October, but we have a meeting November 1st, which would obviously be the first Tuesday of November. That's usually, and then we always have an early meeting in December. So we still have the full total number of meetings, except we'd go to November 1st. We have all kinds of conflicts, and we also have, we're expecting quite a few applications. So, we will have this and for sure one other application in September, maybe one or two more. And then November, that'll give us a little bit of a buffer and then have a meeting on November 1st. Was that the main reason? It was mostly conflict.
Conflict. So we wouldn't be having the meeting on October 25th, which was originally scheduled for us. We would have it on November 1st instead. And then the next one would be December 6th. So there wouldn't be one at the end of November or at the end of December.
So we'll still end up with a net total number of meetings for the rest of the calendar year. It's just it would be September 27th, November 1st, and December 6th.
So do the commissioners have any problems with moving the October 25th meeting to November 1st is the question.
Yes.
That's the question, yeah.
If you have any, any objections, speak up now. Hearing none.
Maybe then.
Hearing none, then we will move the October 25th meeting to November 1st.
Perfect. Thank you.
Then wasn't December 6th one already the December 6th?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they don't have it at the end of November or December because of holidays.
Yeah. I do want to say, though, in October 25th, 26th, and 27th, the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association's annual conference is in Pendleton this year. We've worked for a very long time to have it someplace other than Eugene or Portland, and it's this year in Pendleton. If anybody is interested, we have some training money in our budget, and it's a short drive, so if you'd like to, I'll send it out. I'm actually the co-chair of the conference. I get to go for free, and I think there's quite a few relevant things that are you know, really relevant to rural areas. We have a tract of small town issues. Anyway, I'll send that out, and if, again, if you're interested, I'll see if we can pay for your attendance. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Anything from any of the commissioners for the good of the order before we adjourn?
From Gary? Everyone. Oh, Commissioner Doherty said he's interested. Okay. What was the chat? Oh,
that's Commissioner
Doherty. Oh, he said he winks now. Now he's winking. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Hearing none, we're adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know.